You're listening to Vulcan Has a Faith, the audio podcast about New Birmingham and the people making a difference. All right. It's another great day in Birmingham. It's a beautiful day. We're here again with the return guest, Rebecca Dobrinsky. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Thank you again for being on Vulcan Has a Faith again.
I'm happy. I'm very happy to be here. You know, I was so thrilled when you started this, and because I've known about it since you started getting that idea, and to be able to support you makes me happy. So,
well, you know, I owe you a lot of gratitude because we met a long time ago, mm-hmm. and I was looking for a volunteer opportunity, and you came in the office, and we were talking about what you did, and right now you're co-organizer of TEDx Birmingham.
Yep.
So I asked you about TEDx Birmingham because I've listened to TED Talks for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting, and you know, you let me help out, and it was exciting and such a great event.
Oh, you were missed this year, I have to tell you. And our other folks who were doing the organizing and everything that was happening on the floor, when I told them that you were not able to make it this year, they were very disappointed. So you were very missed.
Well, that's too kind. But but for those who don't know, the reason Vulcan Has a Faith is here is because of TEDx Birmingham. There's so many great people that you guys bring in and let talk about what's going on with them and all. It's just such a great event. I can't say enough good things about it.
Thank you. Well, we're excited. We just finished our fifth year. And 2019 will be our sixth year. We've got some great changes in the works. I can't quite let them out of the bag yet, but keep an eye out on TEDx Birmingham's website and Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, and all of that. And we'll be announcing some really cool things coming up soon.
Yeah, and we'll repost those things too.
Yay.
So it's good stuff. So, you know, we usually ask our guests something about Birmingham. Is there anything that you like to do or eat or visit in Birmingham?
Well, there's been so much because I moved to Birmingham in 1985, as much as under duress as a 14-year-old probably can be, and but I've seen so many changes, and to just be able to watch the amazing progress that the city's doing, and we're getting on this national stage now, and we're getting on this international stage as well, and to see that we are, you know, doing our best to empower and support all Birminghamians.
Absolutely. It's really changed so much.
Yeah. I'm a sucker for a good cause. You know that.
I'm
always doing something with somebody.
Your life has been nonprofit pretty much.
Oh my gosh. Life. I know. So
it's good stuff.
Yep.
So, you know, we had lunch one day a while back. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah.
But I was talking to you about my wife and what she deals with Lyme disease. And, you know, you were telling me about your story, mm-hmm. and what you went through and all. So we started talking about the mental side of recovery.
Right.
So I'm really thankful for you to be in to talk about that, because a lot of people talk about the treatment as far as medication and things of that nature, but don't always talk about the mental side.
Mm-hmm.
So share with our audience a little bit about your story.
Okay, well, I had been having a number of problems with my hip, and to be honest, I always thought it was muscular, some physical therapy, we'd be done. And of course, lots of x-rays and an MRI later, we discovered a stress fracture in my hip, which was the source of great amusement for my friends, because a 46-year-old is not supposed to be breaking their hip. And so I ended up on crutches in August and was on crutches for 3 months. And we tried to treat everything. It's my doctor, and I adore my doctor. He was like, I don't want to cut you open unless I absolutely have to. So we tried every possible treatment to get the pain to go away, and it wouldn't go away. So he finally sent me to this specialist, and he's like, because he thought we were going to have to scope the hip and explore to see what was going on. And the specialist actually found it. So I had developed necrosis in the ball, top of the ball joint of my hip. And my necrosis is idiopathic. And for those of you not familiar with medical terminology, idiopathic means they have no clue how it happened.
Oh, wow.
So I there's one fix for necrosis in a bone, and that is you have to take out the dead tissue. So mm-hmm. the bone was dying. At some point, the blood flow had gotten cut off. And so I'm like, wow, I'm 46 years old and I have to have a hip replacement, which kind of freaked me out. So when I went to the doctor, we went over everything. They talk about the surgery. They talk about what's going to happen with when you're in the hospital, what to expect when you get out of the hospital, your kind of timeline on when you'll be able to do certain things and the timeline of your therapy. You know, home therapy for 2 weeks and then outpatient physical therapy. So it was all about the physical. So I was fully prepared. But what I wasn't fully prepared for, and what I don't think people really talk about, is when you're under anesthesia for a really long time, it takes a little while for your brain to come back.
Hmm.
And that, being somebody who reads 50 plus books a year, you know, has all of these long discussions and debate conversations with, you know, you and I have had those kind of discussions mm-hmm. as well, that I couldn't, you know, I come home, I expect it to be fuzzy with the morphine drip. If you are not fuzzy with a morphine drip, then you've got bigger things to deal with than brain fog. So I expected that when I was in the hospital. But what I didn't expect when I got home was how I would repeat myself, or how I would lose a word on the tip of my tongue, or you could give me a book, you know, like Harry Potter, when that seventh book came out, I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think I finished it from midnight when I got it, and I just voraciously went through it. I couldn't read and concentrate for more than an hour. So when I realized my brain wasn't working right, I actually kind of started freaking out and was talking to my doctor about it.
So you realized pretty much right away your brain was doing some different things.
Right. And he was concerned because, of course, you know, you've replaced a joint in your body. There is pain medication involved. But I was only taking it as needed. I wasn't even, like, keeping myself medicated the whole time once I got home from the hospital. You know, instead of 2 pills every 4 to 6 hours, I probably had 2 pills every 10 to 12 hours. So I knew I was reducing that opioid fog that you just get from taking painkillers. But I had not, I was still having this fog that I just couldn't get over.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. You know, we talk about the mental challenges and things that you have to overcome. Was there things that you were doing to try to help it? Like, I mean, did you read more? Did you play mind games? Or
well, being the historian that I am, and I of course start Googling post-surgical brain fog, which you can actually get a lot of really good information with that search term.
Wow.
And there's a post-surgical something disorder that people are starting to study now, that they're realizing the anesthesia is keeping people from kind of getting their brains back quite as fast. So I decided that, well, if I have to be on a physical therapy regimen, I should be on a mental therapy regimen. So I went through and downloaded some games on my phone, because when you're restricted to your recliner and your walker, you know, I had a walker in the house, you need something to do that's close at hand. So I would, okay, I'm just going to read a chapter. You know, my goal was a chapter rather than, oh, I'm going to read, you know, 150 pages today. And then I would write. I would make lists. I would do all of these things. Magazines were a huge help because you can read that in small, just like it was no different than, okay, I did 10 reps this week. I'm going up to 20 reps next week. It's, okay, I've read the small articles this today, and now I'm going to go to a bigger article next. I did word puzzles. I did logic puzzles. I did these. It was this really cool game where you make little pipes around each other into these designs and connect all these dots. no idea what it's called, but it was, it made me think logically. I had to get eight different things to match up without overlapping. You've got to really think about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started doing, and I would make myself play. I've never played so many games on my phone, ever.
Did you see the changes of getting better? Was it more gradual, or was it, did it come pretty quickly?
It was gradual at first, and then it was like someone yanking the tablecloth off the table and all of the pieces still being on the table, like a magician. Uh-huh. It was very, very slow. I could see progress, but it was frustrating for me especially. And then all of a sudden, one day, it lifted considerably. I mean, I would set back a little bit, you know. I would have good days and bad days. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, I've been reading for 3 hours. And I would notice that coming up as well. So it took a couple of months. The surgery was, actually tomorrow is 6 months to the day.
Yay,
my hip is six months old tomorrow. but it took, I would say, about a good two and a half months before a really steady work and seeing progress, but till I felt like I was back on top of things and normal, which was so difficult planning TEDx Birmingham when, you know, days I would forget that I had a to-do list and things like that. So
I like the term you use with the mental therapy, you know, because obviously hip or physical things, you think about physical therapy, but mental therapy is not talked about either a lot.
No, and I did bring it up to my doctor, and he had asked me what I was doing, and I had explained to him about the reading and the games, and that was about my, I talked to him a little bit at my two-week checkup, and then at my six-week checkup, we had a much more in-depth discussion, because my brain was a little bit more better. That's great. my brain was well enough to have a deeper discussion with him about that. And he said, people are scared of mental things. We know that there's a problem in this country acknowledging mental health in general. Mm-hmm. And anything that could mentally impair you or possibly, people don't want to talk about.
Right.
But you can make it through if you just kind of plan ahead for it. You're going to plan ahead for physical therapy, so plan ahead for mental therapy, too.
That's a good point, definitely. What other ways did you cope with those mental challenges that you had?
My friends were absolutely wonderful. They would stay on the phone with me. We would go get coffee. We would hang out. We would talk. They were so patient. But, I mean, I flat out said, if I start repeating myself, you've got to let me know, because I'm not realizing it, and they knew what I was going through. So they were right there with me. It was like having this group of partners doing, just keeping an eye out for me, supporting me, being there for me. I can't say enough about all of my friends doing just amazing things for me during that time.
Yeah, it's very important to have those connections, those really close friends.
To paraphrase Hillary Clinton, it takes a village.
That's right. Whether it's a small or a big village, right? So I'm curious, did you go through any like depression, anxiety, anything like that?
I had some anxiety, and I still have a little bit left, but my anxiety comes from if I am in a situation where I think I could fall.
I gotcha.
So I think my anxiety isn't as tied to my mental recovery as it is my physical recovery. For example, TEDx Birmingham, I had to walk off and on stage repeatedly introducing speakers, and I was terrified I was going to fall every time I went out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so worried about that. I didn't fall. Everything was fine. But
you
it's those kinds of things. I'm more anxious about my physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
I had friends when I was younger, a bunch of guys who were in the military at the time, and we'd be walking around, and I would walk around like most girls do when they're younger, kind of with their head down, and they would get on my case. They're like, no, you've got to walk. You look, you know, be aware of your surroundings. It's kind of a safety lesson. And now I have to look down when I'm walking because I'm not as confident that I won't hit something and my leg will move a certain way and I could fall. So that's been a really strange kind of transition for me. I have to go back and forth, and I'm surprised I don't get seasick sometimes.
So, you know, one common thing we hear about with a lot of chronic illness and injury and military personnel is PTSD. Mm-hmm. Did you deal with any of that?
No, I didn't really. And okay. I think it's because it was such a relief. Because I was in pain for a good, I would say almost 4 to 6 months before, but it was sporadic before I went to the doctor. And then you've got 3 months of serious pain, 3 months of being on crutches and being in serious pain. And when they got me out of bed at noon, I had surgery in the morning, and at noon they had me on my walker walking around, and the original pain was gone, and the only discomfort that I had was basically the giant incision on my leg. It was the biggest relief. I couldn't believe it.
I see. So let's go back before you had your surgery. I mean, there's a lot of challenges there with the pain. How did you deal with that?
I have been, I don't know if it's blessed or cursed, with an incredibly high tolerance for pain. Like, I tore my meniscus in January of 2015, and it didn't hurt me enough to go to see the doctor until August. And by then, I had torn it in three separate places and almost disconnected it from the root.
Oh, wow.
Which, it was just one of those, you know, I would go to kickboxing class. I went to kickboxing class once after a root canal. I'm covered in tattoos. You know, I have this incredibly high tolerance for pain. I actually didn't take any painkillers until I was on the crutches. So probably about 9 months of pain where I just occasionally take an Advil or just go sit down and read and get off the leg. So it, to me, I didn't know it was getting bad. So that's probably a bad thing, but
yeah. So it's been 6 months now.
Yes, 6 months tomorrow.
So how are you doing now? Or how's your recovery been, and where are you at today?
I was lucky in that I was driving 2 weeks after surgery, mainly because I couldn't stand not being independent anymore. And I asked my doctor, when are you going to clear me to drive? And he said, as soon as you don't take painkillers anymore. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I was on the cane until probably the beginning of January to mid-January. But now most people don't know unless I tell them or they already know. My leg gets a little tired, but I still do exercises. And I'm trying to get out and walk more now. The first time I walked a mile, I wanted the balloons coming up on my phone and stuff. So for the most part, but then there's little things that you forget you were injured. And because you're feeling so good. It's like I pulled a muscle in my leg that I hadn't really used, shaving my legs. Because, you know, you throw that leg up on the edge of the tub and, you know, you're bending over. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, there's a muscle there. So it's re-energizing some of those muscles, I think, is where I'm at right now. That it's just like they're going, hey, I'm still here, I promise.
Yeah.
Start using me a little more. So,
so you know, a lot of people asked, what would you recommend for mental challenges and things like that? You know, we've had several guests on that have faced different chronic illness and injuries, and you know, each one seems to have a different story of how they coped with it and all.
Right.
What would you recommend for somebody that's going through, whether it's an illness or injury, that they could maybe, that you could share with them with what you went through?
Be prepared, because my diminished mental acuity was a surprise for me. I wasn't ready for it, and it freaked me out. But be prepared. Some people come out of anesthesia, like I've had a few surgeries and I've never had a problem this bad, But none of them have had me under anesthesia quite as long as a joint replacement. Mm-hmm. But be prepared for that. And think about what you're going to do if you start feeling foggy. And let the people around you know that this could happen. That you're not just losing your mind. You're not just going crazy. That anesthesia affects your brain. And it affects everybody differently, which is one of the problems with a standard mental treatment plan. Mm-hmm. But think about the things that give you mental joy. Like for me, it's problem solving and puzzles and reading mm-hmm. and being creative. So if it's that, get a set of markers and a coloring book. You know, color a picture, make focus. You know, you've got to get that focus back. I was talking with somebody, you know, writing is another huge thing. They have all these great books, and one of my friends actually brought me one in the hospital. It was a book of 300 writing prompts. And all you have to do is write a few sentences based on the prompt on that page.
Wow.
So it gets your brain going, because your brain's a muscle, just like anything else. Just like I had to rehab these muscles in my hip and in my leg, you've got to do your mental muscles too. Your comprehension muscles with reading, your analytical muscles with puzzles, your creative muscles, coloring, writing. If you plan for that ahead of time and you know it could happen, the worst that could happen is you're out $50 because you bought a few things and you didn't have a problem. But, you know, either way, you can start working on that and making sure that you're prepared. And maybe if you just start, you won't ever notice it started, and you'll just kind of keep it going and keep sharp.
Yeah. As far as the planning part of things, I'm sure there's a lot of conversations you have with the doctor, like, you know, they're going to have their standard lines
yes.
with what standard surgery or mm-hmm. whatever it may be. But we talk a lot about being an advocate for your own health.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you research what's going on, then you can kind of see what's going on in your life to be able to be prepared to ask the doctor.
Yes, and you do have to be prepared to ask questions. Before, I guess about 6 or 8 months before my surgery, I'd read Gretchen Rubin's The Four Tendencies, and you know how much I read.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have this, she can kind of lump people on how they develop their habits into four different categories. It turns out I'm a questioner. And boy, my doctor knows how much of a questioner that I am. It is just my nature. Okay, what's this? Okay, what's that? Oh, can you bring me the bone so I can see it after you take... They didn't, but, you know, I wanted to see it. I'm like, where is it? Show me. So I'm always asking questions. But if you're not the kind of person who normally asks those questions and you're thinking of things beforehand, write them down. Your doctor will stop. And if your doctor doesn't stop and answer your questions, you've got the wrong doctor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and my doctor, Dr. Carr over at Southern Orthopedics, I'm going to give Dr. Carr a shout out. He did my knee and he also did my hip. He was great. He is patient. He actually paid me the nicest compliment when he came to see me in the hospital. He said, when you smile on the world smiles back, and you definitely smile on the world.
Oh, I like
Which
it.
I was like, aw. You know, and of course, I'm like chock full of painkillers, so I want to like get a little weepy. But, you know, he's right. And I think my attitude, too, was I'm an eternal optimist. And you know, I am Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, I suppose. And so keeping an eye and being conscious of things and to go in there going, this is going to help me. This is going to make me better. This is going to make me be able to live my life again.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be prepared and, you know, ask questions. He did. I would ask some of the craziest things and he would look at me like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, you've actually, you know, you've got it a little bit wrong and a little bit right. And then he would educate me on what I needed to know. So it's such a great give and take relationship, and you've got to have that with your doctor.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I consider you a dear friend, and I can say you look great.
Thank you.
I remember those days when you were on the walker and dealing with pain and stuff. And, you know, I was really happy to see you happy.
Yeah.
And back doing
things. It's a game changer. It really was.
Yeah. So thanks again for being on and sharing your story with everyone.
Absolutely. If I can help somebody, you know me, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. And thanks again for all that you do at TEDx Birmingham. Such a great event.
Thank you. Thank you. And you'll be back next year.
Hope so. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Follow us on social media at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Vulcan Has a Fade. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud.